18. Mars Walk. I shared a small temporary space with Elspeth and Kai Mei, an air mattress on the floor, and a bunk bed. We agreed to rotate so everyone would have a bed two-thirds of the time. No romantic trysts for a while. I could ask the girls to look the other way, but Paul might feel inhibited. Hanging sheets for walls and only one desk, with a small screen and a clunky keyboard and an old VR helmet with a big dent on the side. The timing for that worked out okay, since Elspeth had classes 7 hours before Eastern time and Kai Mei 3 hours later. We drew up a chart and taped it over the desk. The only conflict was my physical science class versus Kai Mei's history of Tao and Buddhism. Mine was mostly equations on the board, so I used the screen and let her have the helmet. Our lives were pretty regimented the first couple of weeks, because we had to coordinate classes with the work roster here and leave a little time for eating and sleeping. Everybody was impatient to get the first new module set up, but it wasn't just a matter of unloading and inflating it. First, there was a light exoskeleton of spindly metal rods that became rigid when they were all pulled together. Then, floorboards to bear the weight of the things and people inside. Then, the connection to the existing base, through an improvised airlock until they were sure the module wouldn't leak. I enjoyed working on that, at first outdoors, unloading the ship and sorting and pre-assembling some parts. Then later, down in the cave, attaching the new to the old. I got used to working in the Mars suit and using the dog, a wheeled machine about the size of a large dog. It carried backup oxygen and power. About half the time, though, my work roster put me inside, helping the younger ones do their lessons and avoid boredom. Mentoring, they called it, to make it sound more important than babysitting. I hardly ever saw Paul. It's as if whoever was in charge of the work details, guess who, took a special effort to keep us apart. One day, though, while I was just getting off work detail, he found me and asked whether I'd like to go exploring with him. What, skip math? I got fresh oxygen and helped him check out one of the dogs, and we went for a walk. The surface of Mars might look pretty boring to an outsider, but it's not at all. It must be the same if you live in a desert on Earth. You pretty much have the space around your home memorized, every little mound and rock, and when you venture out, it's, wow, a different rock! He took me off to the left of Telegraph Hill, walking at a pretty good pace. The base was below the horizon in less than 10 minutes. We were still in radio contact as long as we could see the antenna on top of the hill. And if we wanted to go farther, the dog had a collapsible booster antenna that went up 10 meters, which we could leave behind as a relay. We didn't need it for that, but Paul clicked it up into place when we came to the edge of a somewhat deep crater he wanted to climb into. "Be really careful," he said. "We have to leave the dog behind. If we were both to fall and be injured, we'd be in deep shit." I followed him, watching carefully as we picked our way to the top. Once there, he turned around and pointed. It's hard to say how strange the sight was. We weren't that high up, but you could see the curvature of the horizon. The dog behind us looked tiny, but unnaturally clear, in the near vacuum. To the right of Telegraph Hill, the pad where the John Carter had been raised to stand on its tail, waiting for the synthesizer to slowly make fuel from the Martian air. Paul was carrying a white bag, now a little rust-streaked from the dust. He pulled out a photo map of the crater, unfolded it, and showed it to me. There were 20 X's, with numbers from 1 to 20. Starting on top of the crater rim, where we must have been standing, then down the incline and across the crater floor to its central peak.
"Dust collecting," he said. "How's your oxygen?"
I chinned the readout button. 3 hours, 40 minutes.
"That should be plenty. Now, you don't have to go down if you..."
"I do! Let's go!"
Okay, follow me. I didn't tell him that my impatience wasn't all excitement, but partly anxiety at having to talk and pee at the same time. Peeing standing up, into a diaper, trying desperately not to fart. Funny as a fart in a spacesuit, probably goes back to the beginning of spaceflight, but there's nothing real funny about it in reality. I'd taken 2 anti-gas tablets before I came out, and they seemed to still be working. Keeping your footing was a little harder going downhill, and it had been some years since I'd walked with a wet diaper. I was out of practice. Paul had the map folded over so it only showed the path down the crater wall. Every 30 or 40 steps, he would fish through the bag and take out a pre-labeled plastic vial and scrape a sample of dirt into it. On the floor of the crater, I felt a little shiver of fear at our isolation. Looking back the way we'd come, though, I could see the tip of the dog's antenna. The dust was deeper than I'd seen any place else, I guess because the crater walls kept out the wind. Paul took 2 samples as we walked toward the central peak.
You better stay down here, Carmen. I won't be long.
The peak was steep, and he scrambled up it like a monkey. I wanted to yell, "Be careful!" but kept my mouth shut. Looking up at him, the sun sinking under the crater's rim, I could see Earth gleaming blue in the ochre sky. How long had it been since I thought of Earth, other than the place where school is? I guess I hadn't been here long enough to feel homesickness. Nostalgia for Earth, crowded place with lots of gravity and heat. It might be the first time I seriously thought about staying. In 5 years, I'd be 24, and Paul would still be in his early 30s. I didn't feel as romantic about him as I had on the ship, but I liked him, and he was funny. That would put us way ahead of a lot of marriages I'd observed. But then, how did I really feel about him? Up there being heroic and competent and, admit it, sexy.
Turn the heat down, girl. He's only 12 years younger than your father. Probably sterile from radiation, too. I didn't think I wanted children, but it would be nice to have the option.
Meanwhile, he would be fun to practice with. He collected his samples and tossed the bag down. It drifted slowly, rotating, and landed about 10 feet away. I was enough of a Martian to be surprised to hear a faint click when it landed, the soles of my boots picking the noise up, conducted through the rock of the crater floor. He worked his way down slowly, which was a relief. I was holding the sample bag. He took it and made the hand signal for, "Turn off your communicator." I did, and he stepped over close enough to touch helmets, his face close enough to kiss. He spoke, and his voice was a faraway whisper.
"Can you come sleep with me tonight?"
Yes! Oh, yes.
"My roommate's putting in an extra half shift, from 1800 to 2300. Are you free during that time?"
"Class till 1900, but then sure."
He gave me an awkward squeeze. Hard to be intimate in a Mars suit, but I could feel his gloves on my shoulders, the welcome pressure of his chest. He turned his comm back on and gave me a mischievous wink. I followed him back the way we had come. At the top of the crater wall, he stopped and looked back.
"Can't see it from here," he said. "I'll show you."
"What?"
"My greatest triumph," he said, and started down. "You'll be impressed."
He didn't offer any further explanation on the ground. He picked up the dog's handle and proceeded to walk around to the other side of the crater. It was a Dumbo, an unpiloted supply vehicle. Its rear end was tilted up, the nose down in a small crater.
"I brought her in like that. I was not the most popular man on Mars."
As we approached it, I could see the ragged hole someone had cut in the side with a torch or a laser.
Landed it right on the cargo bay door, too.
So that was how he'd become Crash Collins. "Wow. I'm glad you weren't hurt." He laughed.
It was remote control. I landed it from a console inside the base. Harder than being aboard, actually.
We turned around and headed back to the base.
It was a judgment call. There was a lot of variable wind, and it was yawing back and forth.
He made a hand motion like a fish swimming.
I was sort of trying not to hit the base or Telegraph Hill, but I overdid it.
People could understand that.
Understanding isn't forgiving. Everybody had to stop their science and become pack animals.
I could see the expression on Solingen's face, having to do labor, and smiled. She really did have something against me. I had to do twice as much babysitting as Elspeth or Kaimei, and when I suggested that the boys ought to do it too, she said the personnel allocation was her job, thank you. And when my person got allocated to an outside job, it would be something boring and repetitive, like taking inventory of supplies. That was especially useful in case there were actual Martians sneaking in at night to steal nuts and bolts.
When we got back, I went straight to the John and recycled the diaper and used a couple of towelettes from my allotment. No shower for 18 hours, but I was reasonably fresh, and Paul wouldn't be that critical.
At the console, there was a blinking note from the dragon herself, noting that I had missed math class, saying she wanted a copy of my homework. Did she monitor anybody else's VR attendance? I'd had the class recorded, of course, the super exciting chain rule for differentiation. I fell asleep twice, hard to do in VR, and had to start over. Then I had a problem set with 50 chains to differentiate. Wrap me in chains and throw me in the differential dungeon, but I had to get a nap before going over to Paul's. I set a beeper for 15:30, 90 minutes, then got the air mattress partly inflated and flopped onto it without undressing. At 1800, I tried to concentrate on a physical science lecture about the conservation of angular momentum. Sexy dancers and skaters spinning around. The lecturer reminded me of Paul. Probably any male would have. Went to the John and freshened up here and there. Then walked up to 4A, no way to be discreet about it, and tapped quietly on the door. Paul opened it and sort of pulled me in. We hugged and kissed and undressed each other in a kind of two-person riot. He was extremely erect. I played with it for a minute, but he said that might prove counterproductive, and carried me to the bed and caressed me all over, and with his hands and tongue brought me to orgasm twice, my jaws clenched, trying not to make too much noise. Then he showed me a picture of a frieze in India, and I copied it, putting my arms around his neck and clasping his hips with my legs while he entered me. Probably a lot easier on Mars than in India. It was a pleasant sensation, but odd, since he completely filled me, his penis bumping the top of my vagina with every thrust. Maybe in the future there will be advertisements. Come to Mars and fuck like an Indian goddess. Maybe not. I didn't have a third orgasm in me, but his was plenty for both of us. Then we lay in his narrow bunk, spoon fashion, dozing, until his erection came back and we did it again, in that position. Nicely intimate, but not too stimulating, which he took care of afterwards with his fingers. An hour or so of dreamless sleep, and he woke me with a hand on my shoulder. He was fully dressed.
"Jerry wouldn't mind walking in on you like this," he said, "but you might be startled."
I dressed quickly and kissed him goodnight. There was nobody in his corridor, but I did pass a couple on the main way, including Jerry, who gave me an arched eyebrow and a little wave. I slipped into our temporary room and undressed quietly without turning on the lights.
"So, how is our pilot?"
Kaimei murmured in the dark. When I didn't say anything, she continued.
"A simple deduction, Sherlock. You don't exactly smell like you've been riding a bicycle."
"I'm sorry."
"I didn't say I didn't like it. Sweet dreams."
In fact, my dream was odd and disturbing. I was trying to find a party, but every door opened onto an empty room. The last door opened onto the sea. Not delivering my homework like a good little girl got me into a special corner of Dargo hell. I had to turn over my notes and homework in math every day to Anna Seatrell, who obviously didn't have time for checking it. She must have done something to piss off the dragon herself. Then I had to take on over half of the mentoring hours that Kaimei and Elspeth had been covering, and was not allowed any outside time. The extra babysitting time came out of my ag hours, working on the farm upstairs, which most of us considered a treat, as Dargo well knew. I had been selfish, she said, tiring myself out on a silly lark, using up resources that might be needed for real work. So I had the temerity to suggest that part of my real work was getting to know Mars, and she really blew up about that. It was not up to me to make up my own training schedule. Okay, part of it was that she didn't like young people. But part was also that she didn't like me, the sex kitten who distracted her pilot. She didn't bother to hide that from anybody. I complained to Mother, and she didn't disagree, but said I had to learn to work with people like that. Especially here, where there wasn't much choice. I didn't bother complaining to Dad. He would make a growth experience out of it. I should try to see the world her way. Sorry, Dad. If I saw the world her way and cast my weary eyes upon Carmen Dula, wouldn't that be self-loathing? That would not be a positive growth experience.